Well, we still got a few up who can't hear. We still want it up a little more. They need to quiet down. Everybody needs to quiet down. Test. 1, 2, 3, 4. That's good. That's good. That's good. All right. Now, I just need to say to the panel, hello. Welcome. We had a vote at lunch. We put the proposition, actually, we did this polling thing where people suggested questions. And one of the questions came up. It was like, yes, no. Do you want shorter introductions and more questions, or longer speeches and fewer questions? Guess which way it came out. So what we thought we'd do here is I'm going to start with a bunch of questions and lead through a little scenario. I basically think I've got like 3 subjects I want to cover with the panel. And then we just open it up as best we can. And they're hooking up my little camera here, which will take a while, but we'll get to it. Peter Granoff, you run Virtual Vineyards. You started up an internet business. You're selling a connoisseur product. I get this lovely sense of little vineyards in California and Oregon that I can't find at my local store because they're too small to ship. And if only I could get that kind of wine. And I understand you're in that business. Is that right, Peter?
That's correct.
Okay. Well, Peter, have you run into any trouble selling wine over the internet?
No, none whatsoever.
Tell us about it, Peter.
Let's see if I can make this short and concise. We have run into a fair amount of trouble, nothing that we didn't anticipate. The 21st Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, which repealed prohibition, essentially handed back to individual states as part of the political compromise that was struck, the authority to control or regulate the sale of alcoholic beverages.
The 21st Amendment.
That's correct. So what we have in this country is essentially 50 countries, which at least for this particular category of product appear to be exempt from the Interstate Commerce Act and the antitrust provisions of our federal law, et cetera. And the result of that is that we have now been sued along with Federal Express in the state of Massachusetts by a group of wholesalers and a number of other, that's a civil suit, by the way, and a number of other merchants, wine merchants and wineries in around the country have been sued by the state of Florida or prosecuted in criminal court in the state of Florida, et cetera, et cetera.
All right, so let me see if I get the picture. Internet business has a great new idea. We're going to sell products through the internet. You unfortunately happen to run into a business where your opponents have legal apparatus in place that makes it mighty easy for them to come after you.
Mm-hmm.
Wholesalers who've been comfortable selling their stuff, making money, start to notice that you exist. They say, whoa, this is going to cut into our business. This is disintermediating our lines of distribution.
Right.
What we've got to do, let's see, let's have a business consultation. Let's have a high-level strategy meeting. What are we going to do with Virtual Vineyards? Doug Metz. Doug, you're a big guy with wholesalers, right?
I work for them.
You work for them?
Yeah.
But what do you do for them?
I represent them in Washington and provide conventions and services, the usual thing that a trade association does for its
members. Great, great. Doug, here I am, mega boss. Distributor. I've noticed Granoff. Doug, we got a lot of muscle in Washington, don't we?
No, not
hey,
very much.
Not the shit you're talking
Come
about.
On.
We got a lot of muscle, right? That's what I've been buying all these years, isn't that right? Campaign financing. I mean, don't we? Shall I show you the checks? I want him tied up. I don't care, Washington, if you're better in the States. I understand there's 50 jurisdictions. I want this guy entangled. I want him snared. I want him crippled. Can you do it for us, Doug?
No, because we don't want him crippled. We want him to succeed. We want him and his competitors on the internet. In fact, we're going on the internet in another 30 days as well. We want this powerful medium to use for people to find, locate, and get all kinds of alcohol beverages, not just wine. Because what goes for wine goes for beer and goes for distilled spirits, because most of the laws of the states make no distinction whatsoever. I mean, the
Wait, Jeff. I'm talking to you here. I'm the boss of this goddamn company. I want him out!
No.
Can you do it for me?
No, I can't, and shouldn't, and won't, because... But I'll tell you this, though, we're licensed, and we're like an attorney practicing for a court. We're bound to uphold the law, and the law is in most states that you can market, but you can't sell over a state line, right?
Doug, you don't get the competitive aspect of this, do you? Talk to Peter. Are you actually an ally of Peter? Talk to him. Is he on your side or not?
It's hard to construe Doug as being on my side. Yes. Sorry, Doug. That's a stretch for me.
He's got legitimate interest, doesn't he?
I mean,
there are
yes.
serious concerns about
Absolutely.
Alcohol, right?
Absolutely.
There's serious, serious local concerns. He's got those in mm-hmm. his arsenal. That's mm-hmm. what gave us this whole structure.
That's true.
So what's your problem?
Our issue is that much of the concern, how much time do I have here to answer that one?
Hey, I ask you a question, when you go too long, I cut you off.
Okay, fair enough.
I've noticed that.
I think the structure of the industry has changed profoundly. And I want to point out something, too, that this is not actually about the Internet. Direct shipping of wine in particular, and more recently beer and fine spirits, has been growing for well over 30 years. It's been legal in California for decades. All the Internet has done is raise the level of visibility and to accelerate the process and to, of course, increase access. The simple fact is that the consumer and the technology are so far out in front of the regulatory bureaucracy that it's becoming a bit of a joke. And there's a lot of catching up to do. So that's really where my representation or my position is that the bureaucracy needs to adapt to a changed environment.
We commissioned a Wirtland poll about public opinion very recently on the whole question of how and where they should be getting alcohol beverages. And by a overwhelming, over two-thirds, Charlie, the American people said we would rather, for all the considerations of underage access, taxation levels on the product, availability, marketing controls, we believe that the retailer, the licensed in-state retailer, over whom most of us have controls, the regulatory authorities, should be the only source for alcohol beverages, clearly. And
let me just hear that again. That sounds like music to my ear.
Well, it's music to our ears, certainly. Because it affirms the fact that we have a licensed system. We had a lawless industry until 1933. State legislatures had to determine how to structure that, and they developed what is known as the three-tier system, whereby a licensed out-of-state supplier can sell only to a licensed distributor in the state who collects the tax and pays the tax and accounts for every ounce of alcohol coming into the state. And the only customer of a distributor can be someone licensed by the Commonwealth here, for example, to sell alcohol beverages. That's the only way alcohol beverages can be taxed, traced, controlled. And most states, not all states, have face-to-face requirements that you as a consumer can buy alcohol only face-to-face to be carded if necessary, examined at certain hours of sale within your state. That's the very predicate of alcohol beverages. This is not some other product. And with tobacco, Charlie, and others being under attack, they want to license dispensers of tobacco, like licensing dispensers of alcohol beverages. Can you imagine the public backlash if this direct shipment to the home of alcohol beverages continues at its present dimension? There'll be a backlash, and you think the tobacco industry has felt something. The legitimate licensed industries trying to do a responsible job as we're trying to do, there'll be a terrible backlash. I don't think the American people want alcohol sold except through a licensed, supervised premise under control of the individual states.
Thanks, Doug. Richard, is there a solution to this problem? Can you see a way to go here that would get Peter feeling comfortable with Doug and having the states feel comfortable with their interests getting protected and their taxes getting collected and without doing it with a whole lot of law? What do you think?
It seems to me
Tell us who you are. Tell us who you are.
I teach law.
And tell us who you are.
Well, I have various roles. I'm a consultant to various states and to Treasury right now. On
yes, to the Treasury.
But,
you're a consultant to the Treasury.
The usual caveat, I'm here as an individual.
He's a consultant to the Treasury. He's trying to help them figure out how to do this.
It is astounding to me that technology is not part of the solution to this problem. That there seems to me there's a legitimate concern of selling to people who are under 21. And if you can deal with that, the tax problem can be dealt with. That when I order through the internet, the taxes can be added on to whatever the charges that I'm making for the payment of the wine. I then should be able to arrange with whichever delivery group I want, and it should come to my home. And we can have the taxes taken care of, embedded in the price of the transaction. And the only rub is, you know, how to deal with ensuring that I'm over 21. And it seems to me we could handle that problem also, that we don't need all this bureaucracy in between.
Ollie Oldman, what do you say about this? Tell us who you are.
It seems like a natural situation.
Introduce yourself.
I'm one of Charlie's colleagues here at the Harvard Law School. When Charlie first came to be interviewed for the Harvard Law School, he may not even remember this, and I asked him as an interviewer at that time, what do you really want to do? What do you want to teach? You know what his answer was? International tax. Now look what happened to him.
Listen, I'm one of the few people teaching at Harvard Law School who got denied admission when I first applied.
So, but tax is my field, and my concern in this conference is to make sure that that in-between area that this conference deals with in terms of making sure the Internet does all the things that it can do and do it well, and also saving some good public space so that we have this public park for the human mind. In between is the government, and the government and its tax collection and design mechanism is the crucial role that needs to be fleshed out. And right now, we have the focus of a battle on how state and local sales and use taxes should apply to the transactions that take place over the Internet. You have a mixture of hard goods being bought and sold via, like L.L. Bean used to do it, even L.L. Bean's moving to the Internet. And you have a mixture of stuff being delivered directly over the Internet by electrons. Liquor, you can't do that way. Somehow or other, they haven't been able to convert that feeling of a good wine through the Internet.
All right, so let me see if I've got it so far. We've got Peter wanting to sell his wine. We've got Doug with some legitimate interests, but also we've got a bunch of just entrepreneurs behind them who are getting competed with by Peter, who, if, you know, if we put their interests solely in their hands, there's some incentive for them to abuse, let's say. And then we've got Pomp and Oldman saying, well, we'd certainly solve the state tax problem here. We could figure out ways to make sure that the states collected what was due to them. Is that right, Peter?
Absolutely. In fact, may I interject something at this just a moment here? The claim is often made by trade organizations, such as the Wine and Spirits Wholesalers Association that Doug represents, that excise taxes, which are a major source of revenue on a state-by-state basis on alcoholic beverages, are not being collected on interstate shipments. I want to point out couple important things. One is that one of the major sources of interstate shipments are, in fact, retailers in many parts of the country. Retailers like Sam's Warehouse in Chicago, Brown Derby in I believe it's Missouri, Sherry Lehman in New York, Zaki's, Peter Morell and Company, Wine Club in San Francisco, etc. The excise taxes have been paid on every drop of product that they ship. They just haven't been paid in the destination state. Somebody's collected them, though. The state where they are shipped from. The other point is that the wholesale tier, and I at the risk of speaking in generalities, because I know a lot of wholesalers are not quite so clear-cut in their position, but the wholesale tier that stands in opposition to a business like ours, when I look at a Sam's Warehouse or a Sherry Lehman who's shipping 30% to 40% of their sales outside the state, well, who do they think is selling this wine to these retailers? It's the very same wholesalers that stand in opposition to the sales. So I'm a little baffled by the depth of opposition. It's almost like they're shooting at each other when you think about it. The other point on the excise tax issue is that we have had correspondence with numerous states on this issue and have offered repeatedly to not only collect that the excise tax is appropriate, but to have them electronically deposited in a designated bank account instantaneously at the time of transaction. And in virtually every single case that we have had this kind of communication with the state, the response, dead silence. They're like deer in the headlights. They can't cope. They don't know what to do.
All right. So we can solve that part of the problem. Now we just got to get the wine shipped. Let's see if we can get the wine shipped. We can just give it to Bob Reisner, right? Bob, tell us who you are.
Bob Reisner. I'm Vice President for Strategic Planning at the U.S. Postal Service.
Yeah, we just give it to the post office. We'll just have the post office deliver it.
Exactly.
How about that, Bob?
Well, the one problem that our lawyers tell us about is that we're not allowed to touch shipment of wine or spirits in any form because it's part of the criminal code that the post office can't do this. And
part of the criminal code that the post office can't do that. They're worried that the whole post office is going to get drunk.
Exactly.
And do something terrible.
Exactly.
What's the fine if the post office does this?
So, but this is a problem for the post office because we like working for custom. We like shipping Peter's catalogs. We like shipping all sorts of things. And Peter comes to us and says, can't you help us? So our vision would be, maybe there's something along the lines of, can't technology help solve this problem? So why can't we create some sort of a website where FedEx's logo appears on the website, and UPS's logo, and Emery's logo? And we query the customer, where do you want to ship the wine? And Peter says, I want to send it from Napa Valley to Cambridge, Massachusetts. And we say, great, can we get you a bid? There's a tremendous opportunity here. Why not go to UPS and FedEx real time, create a virtual shipping network? That's the kind of opportunity that begins to open up in this market. Frankly, we would have the same kind of problem with the chain, I think, that Peter's been having.
So if I'm getting it right, we've got product and we've got delivery, and they're both products.
Right.
They both can be sold. They both can be compared on the net. And in fact, all of the costs, the payments to people who have a legitimate stake in taking an excise tax or a use tax or whatever else, that can all be arranged more or less electronically, included in the auction price. If I want to buy Peter's wine, it's done. That would be possible, but for the law.
Well, it's not the it's the law that says you have to ship to certain people. It's the law that maybe Esther Dyson was commenting on this morning when she talked about government as an embedded monopoly. Because the law is not so much a law that says you can't ship by mail. In fact, we can probably help customers move past that problem. Fine, so we can't ship wine. Can we take you to someone else who can? We can outsource the shipment of wine if that's a problem, but there's this problem that Peter began with, it's the real problem.
All right, so let's take one step further. Now, Doug represents a bunch of completely reputable, honorable businessmen who would never think of overreaching the power they have with local regulators and local politicians and using that power in ways to create media popular support for protecting our children from alcohol coming through the internet. But let's just hypothesize that someone has that interest. Bill Myers, tell us who you are.
I run the United States Internet Council, which is a partnership of state and federal lawmakers and the internet industry.
So you've got a lot of lawmakers that you relate to. A lot of them like to get elected, right? They like to have campaign financing to get elected, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they like, in fact, they have campaign financing from the big established institutions of business who've been around for a while that understand the way politics works in the United States.
Doug's companies.
Doug's. Doug understands that.
Yeah.
Right. And Peter down here doesn't have an association that's anywhere near as powerful as Doug's. He's a little internet business. In fact, he's trying to fend off lawsuits that people are bringing on him. Not on a theory that they even have to win him. Just he's small, we're big, our pockets are deeper, tie him up in litigation. That's an ensnarement. Mm-hmm. Is this a real problem or is this just...
Oh, it's an enormous problem. I would, as an advocate for the net, I would suggest that it's probably, in its full ramifications, the largest threat to the internet, the electronic commerce that exists. And wine is the very smallest tip of the iceberg. The net by its nature has the insidious effect of undermining barriers to entry. Barriers like the one created with wine 65 years ago, the three-tier system, sort of the regulatory structure that defined the industry in a way that it wouldn't necessarily naturally have evolved. That structure is, any regulatory structure of that sort, is going to find itself under attack and vulnerable to the net. And there are many examples of people, if you think for just a second, you'll think about them, and they're sort of much bigger even than wine. Telephony is a very, very good one. We right now have a system of regulated telephone service, long-distance, international, local telephone service. There is a lot of money to be made with regulatory arbitrage, finding ways to use the internet to deliver the same service without experiencing the same regulatory obstacles.
Let me just elaborate the telephone one. I get an email from a guy who is running a community ISP. He's being denied 501c3 status. He wants to run an ISP, open to communities, as a nonprofit. And the Internal Revenue Service takes the position, nope, not nonprofit. Why, when asked? Because that's competitive with the telephone companies. Mm-hmm. So would that be an example
sure,
of the big established interest using their clout to use the law to shut down the internet operation?
Yes, but it goes far bigger than that. There's something called internet telephony now. It's sort of a new technology pioneered by net entrepreneurs. It's the ability to have a voice conversation over the net. It was a new idea 2 years ago. It is now advanced so far that you can actually do net telephony without either party being on a computer. You can actually do it phone set to phone set. Right? But it doesn't travel over the regulated telephone lines in a way that it is regulated by state and federal governments. Who comes down and who finds this to be a problem? Any business that provides a regulated service. So you have the Association of Small Telecommunications Carriers that have filed petitions to the FCC and in many state regulatory commissions saying, please regulate the software that allows for internet telephony to happen as if it were a common carrier. They're trying to bring this massive regulatory structure that was built up 100 years ago in essentially a monopoly environment and apply it to these new entrepreneurs. If they do it, if they succeed, it'll kill the entrepreneurs.
Let's take another example. Let's take a number of them. Let's take gambling. Mm-hmm. Internet gambling. We see right now attorneys general in a bunch of states. Let's pass laws to stop internet gambling. Is this an example of the kind of thing we're talking about? Who's behind the internet gambling, let's stop it movement?
A lot of them are based in Las Vegas. Others are in Atlantic City, and that's because if you can gamble on the internet, you're less likely to go to these other environments. So you're not prohibited, but it's competition. Now,
so it's
are
the
there
casinos in the state
also,
that
also
are the primary, maybe the big ones out of state, but the ones who are paying the campaign fees, the ones that are putting money into the trough for the paws, those are big established businesses in state whose interests are being hurt by internet commerce.
Yeah, I don't want to paint this as completely black and white because there are grays. There are legitimate issues on sales of spirits, sale to underage children. On gambling, there are those interests that worry about gambling. They just don't want gambling to happen. And they're allied, in this case, interestingly, with the casinos to prevent it on the internet.
Funny thing.
No, it is, and you don't only have to look at sort of this, the areas of sin, the gambling and liquor. There are enormous number of areas. Look at telemedicine. Sort of one of the great hopes, one of the great goods the internet can provide to us is the ability to bring very high quality medical service to rural communities and inner city communities that will never get the best doctors to locate there. Okay, we have got two states now that have decided that telemedicine as it exists today, which is primarily when it's practiced, is primarily sort of assistance with diagnosis, right, over the internet.
the doctors who want to practice it in their states are going to have to fly into their states and sit for a medical license from their state. So in Kansas, which is one of those states, you if you're a doctor in Massachusetts and you want to help with a diagnosis in Kansas, the Kansas legislature wants you to fly to Topeka and sit for a Kansas medical license. There aren't a lot of Massachusetts doctors that are going to do that, and who do you think went out and said, we have to do this to protect our citizens from these disreputable Massachusetts doctors?
Gee, I don't know who.
The Medical Association of Kansas, the people facing the competition. All right. In Virginia, you have lawyers doing the same thing. Now, I know it's unlikely that lawyers would do it, but of course, they have stepped forward.
I'm trying to cut you off there.
They have stepped forward, and they have bitten the bullet. They found that internet entrepreneurs were doing title searches for real estate transactions using net technology very cheaply. All right. So what did they do? The Bar Association of Virginia went to the legislature and said, we really should require that you have a law degree before you do a title search.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right. You
have no idea how much damage you can do with a title search.
The most reasonable thing since
it's an enormous problem, and it's only going to grow.
All right. So we could elaborate this. We could go through realtors and cars, but we've got the point. Mort, grab a microphone, Mort. More, here's where we've got the problem so far. We've got the picture of the internet entrepreneur moving forward, the established entrepreneur. Maybe they're noble and righteous, but maybe also they use their power. The power comes down to the state legislator, the guy who votes, the woman who votes in that legislature, and what they care about is getting elected. All the hearts and flowers, all the words, all the rhetoric, what it comes down to, there is a significant element of pure power in money in politics. And the challenge for the net is how can we organize the distributed resources of the net in order to offset the advantage that the established interests have of money in politics. We're not going to do it with money. I'm not suggesting that. I'm not suggesting somehow Peter gets rich or we get into a bidding war with the state legislators on how much money we can pour on our side into their coffers. But can you see any other way that we could organize the net so that it might give some help to the internet operation that's feeling itself get ensnared and entangled with stuff that state legislatures have control over? Tell us who you are, Mort.
Well, I was trying to figure out what the most relevant thing to say is, and I now need to confess that I am the son of a lawyer who is a title examiner. So I now know why I'm here. And I think I think there is a model, but I think it has good and bad sides, because I guess one of those old-fashioned liberals who doesn't believe that everything the legislatures do are bad. I think we have a lot of regulation of gambling, of doctors, of phone service to ensure that phone service is available to everybody because we use subsidies from long distance to pay for it. So I think that in trying to look for a model that helps people who want to use the internet to buy things to be able to do so over the objections of business who are opposed to it simply because they're going to lose the business, that we have to be careful that we don't create a mechanism that overrides the kind of regulation that I think we continue to need to make sure that the market doesn't enable 12-year-olds to gamble and buy liquor and do lots of other things that we wouldn't want them to do.
And just so that you're clear, I completely agree with that. I think that Doug's position has got a real base under it of true concern, and that's true in all of these areas. These are not arguments that are ridiculous. They're arguments that are subject to being abused in self-interest.
Right. But, I think one has to be careful, since most social tinkering ends up doing more harm than good, that we need to recognize that we could create a monster here that makes it impossible to regulate anything on the net, and we'll regret that in some ways. But I think the clear model here is that you have an opportunity using the technology of the web to organize people who want to buy things through the web. who, as far as I can tell, are at the moment not organized at all. So that you have some industry people fighting this fight. You have some of the realtors who want to sell particular products fighting the fight. But you do not have, despite all the organizations we have in this country, you do not have an organization that basically stands for the principle that, except where there's an overwhelming case for regulation based on some other interests of the society, people should be able to buy what they want on the Internet and have it delivered to them, either over the Internet if that's possible, or through the Postal Service. I think we ought to repeal this law. If I want to buy my liquor over the postals from the postals, have it the Postal Service deliver it, I ought to be able to do that as well, I think.
So, Mort, now, you have a background in the ACLU. You were deep into the fight over the CDA. You saw a network come alive of people who kind of communicated through the net and expressed themselves in ways that eventually came to be understood as the consensus of well-informed opinion, and you saw it take effect. Have we got an opportunity here to form a Sierra Club of the net to keep the environment free?
It's obviously, given the current technology, very easy to do. You could go on the net and ask people who buy things on the net to join an organization. You can easily link them through existing software to their member of Congress, their member of the Senate, their member of the local legislature. And when there's legislation pending or desired, send them an email and ask them to send an email back to their legislator.
I'm not so interested in the email to the legislature. I'm more interested in the email to all the rest of their friends. It strikes me that if we're going to offset his campaign contribution to the local poll in East Texas, that we're going to have to do it with votes in East Texas. We're going to have to actually get to the voters in East Texas.
No, I think, I mean, you have to get to the people, and the question is how many of them would join this and how many of them would go to their friends to do it. But legislators read their mail, mail, I think, in most circumstances, counts even more than campaign contributions if they think it's real mail from real people in their district. So I believe you can, in fact, overcome the power of campaign contributions if you can use the net to do what it's been impossible to do through the mail, because it's just too expensive and you don't get enough of a return, of getting large numbers of people to respond. And we'll see whether that works. If this Congress is probably going to try to pass another Communications Decency Act, and an attempt is going to be made to activate that network to write letters. But I think you should not underestimate I don't think you can vote out the rascals, because you just vote in new rascals, and that doesn't really change anything. You've got to lead people to understand that their constituents care about this. And I think email in large numbers, individually drafted, which the technology makes it easy to do, can make an enormous difference in these.
So let me see if I got the picture. We've got a legislator, and he's going to vote on the bill up or down. Up is Met's way, down's the Net way. And he's got a lot of money coming in from the wholesalers. What he's planning to do with that money is put it into advertising for the next election campaign. He's trying to reach votes with it. That's what campaign financing does. But over here, he's got your Sierra Club of the Net, and you've organized the grassroots in his district, and suddenly they're flooding this guy with email, and he's saying, whoa, I got votes here, and I got money here. Which way am I going to go?
Well, it's better than just money and no votes. It depends, I think, on how many emails he gets and how much he thinks they're real. You know, if everybody copies the standard message that comes out, he'll discount it. If he gets real letters from, I mean, emails, but people writing their own thoughts about how they really use this, how they really care about it, you get enough of those, and I think it counts more than the money.
Okay, so that's the thought. Now let's open it up. That's the proposition. The proposition is we've got a big problem here. My overall thesis is it's time to build a commons in cyberspace. What is a commons? A commons somehow takes advantage of the opportunities to organize the distributed resources of the net in the public interest. And one thought is a Sierra Club of the net, an environmental idea to keep the channels free, an organization that somehow represents net citizenry and that can focus on that which is really seen to be abusive and bring some power to bear. I'd love just to open it up to the audience, the panel, see what we think of this idea. Yeah, is there a handheld microphone or do we just have to sing out? Where's the mic? Yeah, how about the, going to the mics? Any people here just dying to comment right off the bat?
I spent some time doing this sort of thing. I was senior director of worldwide government affairs for Apple Computer. My name's Jim Berger. I'm not a lawyer in Washington. I don't think it'll work. Maybe it's my own bitter experience, maybe times have changed, but I think that the economic interests like Peter and others, and I could name a few like Cisco, Intel, large companies, some of the CEOs you have here, have to understand that their economic interest and their growth is going to be in the Internet. I keep thinking I want to form a new trade association called It's the Network, Stupid, and Public Policy Matters, because frankly, organizations like Doug's, which are representing legitimate concerns, just as there are legitimate concerns on the other hand, have had a lot of funding, a lot of time in Washington. And frankly, there are more people in Southwestern Bell's Washington representative office than the entire computer industry's Washington office put together. What Bill was talking about with Internet telephony is a serious threat to the net. I don't think that we could explain it in 15 or 20 minutes to this group, so that they could understand it thoroughly and be able to write those letters to the congressman. I think that what we need is the industries, the IT industries, the Internet industries, to get off their duff and start to do the hard work of, you know, it's not just campaign contributions. It's being able to bring your CEO into town, sit down with congressmen and senators on a one-to-one basis and explaining what this means to our economy. I would love to do what you want to do. I've tried. I don't think it'll work, frankly.
Jump in here. I think that Jim's right. It's not that there's not a role for a Sierra Club of the Net. There is. But it's a role that's part of a coalition that includes a newly energized high-tech community and the entrepreneurs. And they have to work together because they each bring something to the puzzle. There is evidence that the net community, when mobilized, can have an effect. The best piece of evidence is the consideration of Internet access charges by the FCC. When the FCC announced a couple of years ago that it was going to consider permanent access charges on Internet usage, they got, I think it was 350,000 emails in a two-week period. This is two years ago when you had a far smaller net population. All right? That made a difference. They rethought it and you didn't get Internet access charges. But that, the fact that I can give you that example and that Jim is nodding yes, that's it. There aren't other examples. There's nobody that's been beat in Congress because they're an enemy of the net. And let me give you a good example of how profoundly this important this is. The key issue for the Internet industry is encryption. You know, that is the issue that if you pull the CEOs, they care most about. It matters to the growth of the net. Silicon Valley in California is represented by two U.S. senators who oppose encryption and are losing and leading the fight against encryption. The CEOs have gone to them, they've talked to them, they've got their employees involved, they have mobilized on encryption more than they have on any other issue, investing millions of dollars in that fight, and they continue to lose. The coalition has to be brought together. It's not any individual element.
Let's go again. Yes. Tell us who you are.
My name is Charlie Brenner.
What do you do, Charlie?
Pardon?
What do you do?
I work for Fidelity Investments, but I'm speaking for myself today. The protection of children seems
I speak that way, too.
The protection of children seems to be kind of a shield that is held aloft by people who want to prevent adults from doing what they want to do, whether on the Internet or elsewhere. And we heard about that in some of the forums yesterday with regard to protecting children from pedophiles and therefore filtering content. And today we're hearing about preventing underage drinking. And I would just wonder how many people in this room think that the current regulatory system is effectively stopping underage drinking.
I agree with you. Access to alcohol is far too easy, even under a licensed regulated system. But the argument that the students against destructive behavior, decisions rather, formerly known as Students Against Drunk Driving, the argument of MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, the argument of the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, and many other trauma nurses and people who see tragedies in the hospital are, why should we make it easier? And I've seen sad chapters across the country demonstrate in their high schools, rallies about how easy it is. No questions asked. If they ask, are you over 21, you click on yes, and the alcohol arrives. And I'm talking about low-end products, too. Low-end products. 14-year-olds getting Bud Light in Kentucky. Stings conducted by radio stations, not state administrators. This is the wave of the future. Now, with 3-4 credit cards average per 18, 19-year-old college student, come on now. If the Internet's the way, then the problem's going to get greater. And the public interest groups, talk about David and Goliath and money. Money means nothing when MAD is after you, at least we found in our industry. Money means nothing. So it's not just a question of money. I agree with Morton and the first question.
Can I offer a comment on that, though, too? I teach law. My biggest problem teaching law is that the kids who come into law school are already confirmed lawbreakers. There's not one of them that hasn't used a fake ID. And think about a fake ID. A fake ID is a serious offense. This is your identity, and you're submitting it in legal transactions. And I'm supposed to teach these kids not to cheat in discovery. The idea that the way to deal with this problem is to pass sterner and sterner laws against it, which make the law increasingly incredible and increasingly brittle and denies credibility to the people that would like to try and teach that alcohol and all other forms of intoxicants are privileges not to be abused. That's something that you can teach. But the idea that the way to do it is to go more law is just pandering to fear, isn't it, Doug?
Yes, in fact, there's creeping prohibition in this country. Can you imagine the American people? They don't want guns sold, sourced and sold on the Internet. They treat guns and alcohol the same way, unfortunately. But we have creeping prohibition. Mayor Daley in Chicago is actively circulating information of how precinct and block after block of apartment houses can go dry. Over half of Texas is dry geographically. Over half, 2/3 of Kentucky and parts of Tennessee and on and on and on. We are in creeping prohibition in this country. Can you imagine? We're not the average product that should be sold. It can be marketed vigorously, catalogs, kiosks, in every store. Order the wine you want from all over the world, but get it through the license system. Make the license system accommodate that
right.
particular consumer need.
Give his members their cut. Yes, Peter.
I feel like I have to weigh in on the minor access issue. I do believe that it is a legitimate issue. However, I believe that it is frequently misrepresented and that there's a lot of potential hysteria and that the net, the connection with the Internet is deliberately used because of a fear about the medium itself to increase the amount of hysteria. There's no question that minors can get access to alcohol via the Internet. I'd be an idiot to claim otherwise. But I do think we have to ask a more fundamental question, which is what sort of a society do we actually want to live in? We presumably, in theory, have an open society. And just because something is possible does not actually mean that it's taking place. There is, in fact, very little evidence that I have seen that suggests that minors are availing themselves of access to alcohol via the Internet other than government-sponsored stings or, as Doug mentioned, this radio station. In other words, a deliberate attempt to prove that it can be done when everybody knows it can be done. We would love to see tighter restrictions on an adult signature requirement at the point of delivery, and I think every responsible merchant that I know of supports that position. I would also offer the testimony of Mr. Manuel Espinosa, who's Director of Enforcement for the California ABC. Doug and I both were at this congressional meeting last year in the state of California, and with 20 years of experience directly concerned with these issues, Mr. Espinosa testified that he knew of no instance from California or any other state where minor access to alcohol via a newsletter, a telemarketer, a catalog, an internet merchant, or any other direct mechanism was an issue. None.
Morris. Grab a mic, Morris.
Alcohol is, I think, the wrong example for the issue of parental control, because we all know that anybody who wants to buy liquor can do it, and as somebody suggested, the internet doesn't exacerbate that problem. There are other products, particularly information, where I think it is different, and my view, to make sure somebody says something controversial before we run out of time, is that we need to provide parents with the capacity to filter what internet sites their kids get to. And if we don't do that, we're going to find the government regulating what sites can, in fact, be on the internet. And I think that's the way to deal with the problem of children not ordering things you don't want them to and not seeing things you don't want them to.
And the technology exists today. I mean, right now, it is, if a parent cares about filtering what their child gets, then the parent can do it, and they can do it for essentially free. It takes very little. I mean, this is something that grandmothers do. This does not require high technical skill. Sign on to America Online, like 8 million people do, and you can take care of it with three mouse clicks. I mean, this is, and you can do it in other ways as well. So the technology is there. Let me add one other controversial statement before it leaves. I would suggest that aside from the smokescreen of kids, you know, and all of that, that discussion, we need to look at sort of at least three levels more deeply into this and question whether or not the regulatory state that governs sort of the industrial world is the appropriate model to transfer to cyberspace. And I would suggest that in a lot of areas we see that it's probably not. On the very practical level, you will not, no coalition of high tech and citizens is going to easily be able to defeat any industry with 65 years of experience in a regulatory structure. They own the structure, all right? And I don't mean that of wine, I mean that of telephones, I mean that of sort of all of the heavily regulated industries. And battling that system on those terms is asking for a lot of defeats before you reach any successes. It's also not the right solution to the problems. If we ask ourselves, how would we prevent underage sale of liquor today, right? Wipe the state clean, we would probably not come up with the answer that exists. If we asked ourselves how would we provide universal service for telephony, we would probably not come up with sort of in today's world, we would not probably not come up with the solution we did 100 years ago and are trying to make work in today's world. I think we need to re-question the assumption of whether or not sort of this highly regulated system works, and I think we probably need to look at new ways to achieve the right goals.
Rick, we've got government represented here, at least virtually, with Treasury and Post Office, and I would really love to know whether Treasury and Post Office can help us with this problem.
We should defer to Treasury, of course.
Let me speak not as Treasury, but as an international tax lawyer. I should have more faith in technology than I do, but I could just imagine all of these websites moving offshore and being easily accessible, not by me, but by a 16-year-old who could really do this. We've seen elaborate anti-tax avoidance rules in the Internal Revenue Code completely nullified through the use of offshore tax havens. So I don't know that I have the same confidence in technology to be able to solve many of these problems.
Different point. Before we abandon the commons, because we moved very quickly to this whole argument of what's practical, we immediately began sort of comparing the building blocks of does this guy's power equal this guy's power in a world that's so dynamic that none of us can predict where it's going to be in 2 years. The absence of a public policy voice at this time, saying a lot of the things that are being said here today is just plain when you begin to get into these debates over how should the infrastructure work. The interests that are manifest in these debates over infrastructure are so clear that the absence of the public voice is something that you can hear again and again. And to take it more parochially to the Postal Service, there's substantial questions about how the country's $60 billion infrastructure ought to be redesigned to serve the nation's interests in the next couple of years. And there's very little of that. With the debate that goes on over that infrastructure, that piece of the universal service puzzle, is all a debate about the unfairness of competition with the private sector. So At some point, we should go back to the commons, but I can see we've got some...
And you're actually in a quite interesting position in the post office, because you represent, if I understand it right, first of all, a nonprofit organization.
That's right.
Which has now got incentive management, and so you've been making money hand over fist for the last 4 years.
It's not hand over fist. We've been making money.
You just, as I understand it, had a $1 billion surplus this year. Am I, a billion somehow resonates with
you're,
me. I like
you're,
a billion.
You're $1 billion. Yes, that's right.
And you've got a whole bunch of people coming after you now saying, hey, aren't you nonprofit? What are you going to do with that $1 billion?
That's right.
What are you going to do with it?
Well, the big question is whether you should reduce prices or whether you should invest it.
What's your answer, Bob?
Invest it.
What would you invest it in, Bob?
I didn't hear the question.
What would you invest it in?
Well, I think that it's clear that the whole concept of communications is changing, and the demands of customers are changing. And before we move down the road to the place where everyone says, that was great, we loved it back when you were on Main Street, we don't need it anymore, let's just remainder the whole thing. Let's transform it into something that serves public interest.
Question.
Yes, my name's Ira Goldman, and I work with a private sector group commissioned by the governor of California to promote or devise and promote policies for electronic commerce, whether regulatory or deferring to the private sector. In with the delivery of goods, let's say by FedEx, sometimes I get a package that says signature required, but it's left under my porch. Presumably, if that's stolen, somebody's insuring that delivery. I'm not going to take the hit on it. In the, with the delivery of wine, in the contract with the carrier, couldn't it say if no signature of a somebody over 21 is had when it's delivered, that the carrier has to give you X amount of money, and so that there is a penalty within the contract for the delivery of the goods as an alternative to the current situation. I don't know who is liable civilly, but at least as an indication of industry concern, that you're saying it's like with motion pictures that are rated X. If a 15-year-old gets into an X-rated movie, the entertainment industry said that's terrible, but they still get their cut of the sale of the ticket to the minor. Couldn't this be a showing of good faith to stave off regulation?
Interesting idea. The official, I don't know if anybody's here who can speak for FedEx or UPS, but the official position of the shipping companies is a little bit hard to figure out sometimes. I mean, you hear a variety of different things. I think that on balance, however, they don't see it as their battle. They basically are saying to businesses like us, you guys sort it out. We don't want to get sucked into the litigation. When you've got it figured out, if you can get safeguards in place, we'll be delighted to work with you. But because we've got this patchwork of regulatory issues on a state-by-state basis, it becomes exceedingly difficult to get those kinds of regulations hammered out.
So they're refusing to offer this to you as a service for some additional charge?
Well, there is an initiative within Federal Express that is moving along, although it's difficult to figure out exactly where it is, that would set up a feature at the point of delivery that would ensure exactly what you've stipulated, that an adult signature was acquired at the point of delivery. There, it would have to have a surcharge, because one of the big things that FedEx and UPS fear is the additional costs involved. The minute they have to go back for a second delivery attempt, they're losing money. And that's a legitimate issue on their part. And I think the only solution for this kind of thing, no matter who the delivering entity is to figure out a way to guarantee that an adult signs for the package.
That I can buy from you on the internet, I can pick my shipper, but I have to ship to a retailer. And if we think that retailer is presently doing a good job of safeguarding our age requirements, then that surcharge could be paid to the retailer for simply acting as the intermediary of ensuring I'm over 21. It's
Doug,
a compromise.
Have we got a deal, Doug? Is that a deal?
Well, Well, as long as all the other state interests
are satisfied, they can audit, they have jurisdiction. One of the biggest problems now, when there's not a state offender or alleged offender, the states can't get jurisdiction. They have misdemeanor laws now. They're raising them to a felony simply to try to get jurisdiction over the person. So it's a frustration level that's leading to, I think, increased enforcement, more complicated, further complicating the problem.
Let's go here.
Hi, my name is Thor Iverson. I'm a wine critic and internet reporter for the Boston Phoenix, a local newspaper. You know, we've talked about the tax issue, the taxes in the individual states being possible to pay, both with electronic payments and with regular payment schemes. There is a non-technological solution to the problem of underage drinking. It's the same one you practice in liquor stores every day. Checking IDs at the point of delivery is no better or worse than the current system. So, if Doug, if you're saying that you know that there's a new prohibitionism in the country, and yet your organization appears to be supporting felony laws in states to protect your interests, I'm wondering what you feel your role in that prohibition is. Given that, no matter what system you have, there are still wines that you, as a wholesaler, can't get to me as a consumer.
Glad you asked the question. I think in about 30, 60 days, we'll have on the internet a national locator system, 1-888-WINE-411, and you'll be able to find out once you identify your state, a local 1-800 number, so that if the wine is not represented in the state, carried by in distribution, whether it's from South Africa or whether it's from Sonoma County, you'll be able to get it, and you'll be able to pick it up at your friendly retailer. Or in states like Connecticut, the retailer can send it right to the home.
Why to wines like, for instance, the Ridge ATP wines that are sold in New England only? You'll be able to get those to me?
Absolutely, absolutely. That's the commitment that our people are making.
Hallelujah. Question?
Yes. Now, I'm Don Talaj. I'm with Network Solutions. And
you're more than with Network Solutions.
I'm one of their spokesmen in matters of internet governance issues.
What's your position with Network Solutions?
Well, currently a senior vice president.
Thank you.
And one of the directors. But what I wanted to do is to make some comments on and ask a couple of questions. I can't help but empathize tremendously with your first questioner from Apple, formerly from Apple, and I also resonate with Bill's comments on the massive infrastructure. But there are two observations, I think, that I'd like to make that I have noticed relative to the internet community over the last couple of years. And one of them is that the culture of the net is, in fact, a significant impediment to the commons idea. And I'd like to try and explain how I think that works. Basically, I think that's a great idea. I don't know whether we could make it work, but it's very clear to me that the distrust of government interferes with the entrepreneur's movement towards that influencing entity as a medium. We are our own worst enemies in some respects. I recently did a tour of speaking engagements in Silicon Valley with many top CEOs and was astounded by their lack of interest in policy and policy-related matters back in the Washington area. And I was interested to note yesterday when Mr. Ballmer pointed out that Microsoft spends in excess of a couple of $1 billion on R&D, and I saw an article a few months ago in the newspaper that Microsoft's total policy expenditures are around $2 million. So, I mean, that ought to give us some kind of an idea of where Silicon Valley CEOs are setting their priorities in terms of understanding what effort it's going to take to make the changes that are going to be required. The commons is going to require them to change their thinking.
Great. My just if I can make a quick response, I truly believe that an awful lot of the problems that we have with the internet is because we think of it as the CEOs on one side and government on the other, and then our net community out here. What we're missing is something that's not there. It's a vibrant, non-profit, really entrepreneurial, developing community. And if we had that in the picture, then I think we'd have a different story. Let me go to this one. Yeah.
My name is Ben Compain, affiliated with the Center for Information Policy Research. Some of you may remember some history, maybe not, about King Gordius. Many centuries ago, who was a king in what today might be called Turkey, and he had a big ball of twine, and he used to take pleasure in asking visitors to come and try to undo the ball of twine. Everyone tried to do it one strand at a time, and the story goes that Alexander the Great came through town and was challenged gleefully with this problem, and he took his sword and just sliced it in half, one fell swoop. I think I started to hear Bill say something about the old industrial models aren't going to work, in this, and trying to do the same kind of legislation that was based on the old industrial models is just going trying to undo the Gordian knot one strand at a time. Yesterday we heard Scott McNeely talk about things like the card, the ring that can be used for authentication with passwords that could solve the wine problem, the porno problem, the tax problems. I don't know if that will work, but I think that we have to stop thinking linearly and take fresh approaches, whether it's the common or something else, and not just keep saying, well, we need this law or that regulation.
Great, thanks. Yes, sir.
Dave Hamill, I work for the U.S. Information Agency, and we try to explain the sort of thing we're discussing today to people overseas, and it's not easy. I need some help here. It seems that we've got, this is a very interesting issue to me, because we probably have tighter restrictions on alcohol than any country outside of the Muslim world, and yet we have the biggest problem with binge drinking, and we've not even touched that while we've gone around and around on what should be a simple marketing technology issue. And yet, I think we're in the phase of looking for our regulations and our laws to help us avoid the social question. Can the net and the kind of discussion we're having today maybe help us get around some of this? Is that what we're about?
Yeah, I think so. Anybody want to comment on that? Yeah, I believe that completely. I think what the net is about, I mean, Larry Lessig's, to me, inspiring idea is that on the net, where boundaries are more or less non-existent, where enforcement is near impossible, we're going to have to build our society with norms. And those have to be reflected in code. To the extent that we rely on law to hit people with sticks in order to make them behave, we're giving up our self-responsibility. We actually have to work out the way in which we do this so that people learn to be more responsible. I completely believe that I'd have a lot better chance teaching kids to stay off drugs if I had the following things. One, a credible set of drug laws. Two, enough interest in K-12 education so that the kids who start out addicted to learning don't get bored by the time they're in the fifth grade and want their minds still to keep expanding, so they're into marijuana, and then when that doesn't turn out to be so exciting after a while, they're open to something else. If we invigorated education and made the law credible, I think we'd have a heck of a lot better chance of dealing with our problems than we do by just upping the sanctions and making believe that this is actually going to bring us through. It's like if brute force doesn't work, you're not using enough of it.
Yeah, here.
No, there we go. I just wanted to expand on that for just a moment, because you focus on something that is really key to this whole issue, which is respect, and respect specifically for the law. I think a big part of the problem, and I know this issue is much bigger than, you know, my business and alcoholic beverages, but a big part of the problem that is emblematic in the case of our business is that consumers don't have any respect for the restrictions that the state regulatory agencies place on them. And so they're quite happy to do an end run around them. And that is the wild card in the equation that that we've all in the industry got to come to terms with. You and all of the consumers that we have had dialogue with look at these restrictions and they laugh. I would also remind, you know, all of you that at the height of prohibition, there were cases of whiskey stacked in the basement of a House and Senate building in Washington, D.C. 75% of American adults drank on a regular basis. So we've been this route before. It didn't work, and it's pointless to go down that path again.
Real quickly on this too, I also think you're exactly on target. I think there's a sterility to a lot of the public policy debate today because we haven't, in our discussion, separated our goals, those things that we're trying to achieve, from the means we're going to use to achieve them. And often what happens is while there's a broad consensus on the goal, preventing underage drinking, right, there is no consensus on the means because the means either are not working as well anymore or are tied up in political questions. If we look and create this commons and use it in order to send signals, what is legislation and public policy if not a signaling process? This is what we as a society want you to do. If we use a commons to send those signals about the goals we're trying to achieve, then what we get back from the internet community can solve a lot of the problems. It already does. We sent a lot of signals as a society that we didn't want kids, we wanted to be able to screen what kids saw on the net. And what happened was the internet community, in its very diffuse way, gave us back a lot of filtering technology to use. We did the same thing with pornography online, and what the net communities come back with are all these validation systems. Now, this isn't perfect, but it is a lot more effective than any law that would be passed that just says don't. You know, it's much, much more effective. And if we build that commons and we create these new systems of sending signals out to the internet community, we may be able to solve a lot of problems without ever getting around to the actual passing of a law, which wouldn't be a bad thing.
Absolutely.
We'd be solving problems.
Absolutely. Yeah, good. All right, last question. Tell us who you are.
Jonathan Greenblatt. I'm an MBA student at the Kellogg School of Management and used to be with the federal government and worked on internet policy issues. And I actually would respectfully disagree with the gentleman who's formerly of Apple about the idea of creating a new trade association. You know, it's the network stupid, because actually it's the economy stupid is still the message. And I think one of the problems in achieving goals of the internet community, things like internet taxation or net telephony, et cetera, is the internet community, the high-tech community, still thinks of itself as almost a narrow silo and doesn't do enough coalition building with the groups who this really matters to, and if not now, not today, then tomorrow, the National Association of Manufacturers, the Business Roundtable, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Now, I think the U.S. Internet Council is actually moving in that direction, but that's what it's about. It's about coalition building. It's about thinking beyond simply the high-tech crowd, but how we reach out to the rest of the economy that's really being reinvented by this. When high-tech trade associations, and I don't think we need more of them, but I think what we need those to do is to think imaginatively about who their partners are and build coalitions. That's how you really see change in Washington. But I would just say one point, which is what you just said, Bill, is right on the money, that the internet community has already shown through developing filtering technologies and other means like that, they can indeed create the tools for self-regulation and for self-governance.
Go ahead.
In all those high-tech trade associations in Washington, they aren't there. I agree with you. You're absolutely right, but you have to have the meat in your organization to be able to sit down as an equal with the rest of those organizations, and it doesn't exist. I mean, I don't want to bore the audience. I go through every single high-tech trade association and explain the flaws in them and why they don't really represent the network. And I agree with you. It is the economy, stupid, but we're talking about moving to a network economy, and that's why I think that we need to have, and I agree, it shouldn't just be the high-tech gurus, you know, the Scott McNeelys and Bill Gates and all those. It's just a lot more to the business community. And I think that there can be a synergy between that organization that doesn't exist today. I'd like to get rid of all the other high-tech organizations and focus on a net organization that isn't just the round up the usual suspects who, as Bill and others were saying, don't really get public policy. Then you could communicate and establish the nonprofit part of it that would be the common. So I don't disagree. I just think it's a matter of scale and where people aren't today.
It's not darkness and doom currently. Jim, you will remember, and people should know, that Jim is probably single-handedly the reason why high-definition television standards are not restricted to television now and are available to computers, why the standards were changed in order to make sort of in order to recognize the convergence, and he did that through trade associations and coalition building when he was at Apple. So, I mean, it already happens, it just doesn't happen enough, all right? And I know this is probably inappropriate, but I just want to say one thing about Jonathan Greenblatt. people in the room probably don't know who he is, but he is one of the key reasons why the administration's policy on electronic commerce is as positive as it is. He was the lead staffer on the commission they set up, the Interagency Commission. They came out with their policy statements a year ago, Ira Magaziner's commission, and just, I mean, he deserves a round of applause from everybody who cares about the Internet, because that report was the best thing this administration has done.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, John. Just last comments, if people feel they want to make them. Ollie.
On the larger question of the commons and the suggestions that have come up for the Sierra Club type approach, the nonprofit approach to examining these problems, where there are many differences for the different groups. Trade associations can't be relied upon. It seems to me that the only way you're going to come to grips with this in a big way financially is not grassroots nonprofits. Enough noise has to be made at conferences like this to get some big foundation like the Ford Foundation to literally turn around its entire operation and focus on where we are with this big new world.
Have you got a contact?
No, I have a contact, and I can remember how the Ford Foundation 50 years ago awakened the whole university world throughout the country to the importance of educating our students internationally as to the world that they were in. It's now time for the Ford Foundation to find a new theme and move into the Internet, thinking of it independently of the way the private sector and government people think about it.
Mort, last comment.
I think relying on the Ford Foundation is as dangerous, in my view, as relying on the government. I think sure we need industry associations, and when the traditional business groups are on the right side, we want them in the alliance as well. But the missing ingredient, I think, is an active association of the people who want to be able to use the Internet for intellectual activity and to make purchases more efficiently and more cheaply. But I think one of the issues is going to be whether people are prepared to pay for that. The Ford Foundation is not going to pay for that to happen. And the question is whether the ethic of the Internet that says we never spend any money in relation to it will change enough for people to make the kind of modest individual contributions that I think are necessary to make this work.
Right on. Would you join me in thanking the panel? Thank you very much.